Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Thursday, June 8th. Today, Sun reporters Michael Booth and John Ingold talk about their latest environment and health reporting, including details about a health insurance company that is going out of business. Before we start, a quick message. Join the Colorado Sun this September for the first Sunfest this fall. Topics will include policy and politics, the environment and outdoors, healthcare, and much more. Grab your tickets today. Visit coloradosun.com/sunfest. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. A spark struck at a campsite by a U.S. Forest Service employee on this day in 2002 ignited the largest recorded fire ever to hit Colorado until that time. Over the span of 6 weeks that summer, the Hayman Fire scorched about 215 square miles in Douglas, Jefferson, Park, and Teller counties. According to a confession made by Terry Barton, she accidentally set off the inferno deep in the Pike National Forest when she burned letters from her estranged husband, although many details of Barton's story remain in dispute. The fire spread rapidly through a tinder-dry forest and was complicated by squabbles between local fire departments. The blaze claimed 133 houses and led to the deaths of 6 people, including a woman who succumbed to a smoke-induced asthma attack and 5 firefighters from Oregon whose van rolled on Interstate 70 in Garfield County. Before we continue, join Jason Blevins on June 29th as he hosts Hit the Trail, Tips to Stay Safe While Tackling 14ers. The event is free and virtual. Register today at coloradosun.com/14ersafety. That's 14ER safety. Next, our feature story.
Thanks for joining us on the Colorado Sun podcast today. Thursday, every week, we look at stories that have appeared in the Temperature, Climate, and Health newsletter, and other stories that are upcoming in the Colorado Sun website. And we always have with us myself and John Ingold, our great health reporter, to talk about some of the most important stories that we've been working on. John, thanks for being on today.
Of course, Mike, always a pleasure.
And you have been continuing your coverage of what's going on with health insurance and health insurance plans in Colorado. And you've been kind of doing a twofer on both Friday health plans and Friday surprises that are not so great surprises for their clients, and also updates on the Colorado option, or the Colorado version of the option. So tell us first about Friday health plans. What's the latest, and are they going to make it through the end of the year?
Sure. So Friday health plans is a relatively new health insurer. They're sort of startup-y. They're what's known in sort of industry analyst speak as an insurtech. They use sort of Silicon Valley style startup technology to try to create a health insurer that'll be more consumer friendly and can also run a little bit leaner. So we've seen a number of these come recently. Friday is actually headquartered in Colorado and has a large base of operations in Alamosa because a few years ago they scooped up a formerly nonprofit health insurer that operated there. So Friday operated in a number of states, including Colorado, and they've been having some rocky financial times for a while. They had expanded really, really rapidly. They'd grown to something like 300,000 members across the country, and that included more than 250,000 in Texas alone, which they gathered up in a couple years. So they added a lot of people really fast, and then that meant they needed to scale their business, and it also meant that they were on the hook for potentially a lot of money if they missed on their numbers, if their actuaries didn't get their premium numbers calculated quite right, and they needed to dip into the reserves to pay medical claims for that year, which appears to be what ended up happening. They didn't have enough money to pay all the bills they had coming in. They were dealing with vendor issues and trying to scale that up. They started going under in states like Texas and Oklahoma first. They've been placed into receivership in Nevada and Georgia, and they announced last week that they're going to wind down their business nationwide, and that includes here in Colorado, where they insure about 30,000 people, mostly in the individual market.
And John, sometimes in any startup, they can price things low at the beginning in order to attract customers and help with their marketing. And then costs go up, and in insurance, that can be dangerous because, you know, any one bad case or long surgery can be a $1 million case very quickly. Do we know if that was some of their problem with Friday Health Plans?
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right on those risks. You know, being in the insurance business is a really inherently risky business. You're a risk-bearing entity. So there's a thought that there might be a couple things that happened here. The first is that Friday's big expansion really coincided around sort of the second year of the pandemic. And so if you think back to the first year of the pandemic in 2020, you were seeing like elective surgeries get shut down all across the country for a big chunk of the year. You were seeing people staying away from their doctor's offices. You were seeing in-person visits convert to telehealth visits. You were seeing essentially a lot less activity in the medical space that would have resulted in higher cost claims. And so insurers ended up having a pretty good year in 2020. The problem is that when you as an insurer are trying to calculate, how do I figure out what to charge for the next year? How do I figure out what to charge in 2021? Part of what you do is you look back to your experience for the previous years. And so if you're looking back to that 2020 year to calculate your 2021 rates, you're probably not using the best data. And then on top of that, 2021, as we can remember, ended up being a really big year for people going to the hospital, both folks with COVID, but also folks who had delayed care, people who had put off getting elective surgeries who are now going back, people who had allowed problems to get worse than they would have been if they had treated them sooner. And so the patients coming in 2021 were sicker. And so there were a lot of insurers that just got really, really hammered in 2021. And that appears to be the case with Friday here in Colorado. They said in a regulatory filing that they did not price their plans appropriately in 2021, and it resulted in them having a loss here in Colorado. And the second problem here is that these insurtech companies, I mentioned they kind of operate a little bit like Silicon Valley startups. Well, part of that is, you know, how do we talked last week about insurers needing big capital reserves to be able to pay off your bills that they didn't anticipate. Well, if you're a startup, how do you get those big reserves? You do it through venture capital funding. And so these companies have been like raising a lot of money venture capital wise, and then to try to attract people to their plans, the sense has been that they're maybe trying to price their plans lower than they should. And this is an interesting thing about Friday. We've talked before about how our state regulators here have to approve insurance plans every year. They have to improve the insurance rates every year. And so insurers will file a requested rate, and then the state will go through its regulatory process, and then they'll come out and say, like, okay, this is what your final rate is. And normally the way that works is insurers will say, like, hey, we want a 10% increase in our rates. And the state, after looking it over, will say, no, we'll approve a 3% increase in your rates. But something that would happen with Friday is Friday would file a requested rate, and then twice in the last 4 years, the state has come along and said, actually, you need to charge more than what you're saying you want to charge, which is a really unusual thing. But the state was apparently worried.
The state was trying to save them from themselves in a way.
Yeah, well, and so, you know, these health insurers operate on the individual market, which is in Colorado, it's the Connect for Health Colorado Insurance Exchange. So it works like an Amazon for shopping for insurance. You go in, you type, you know, your age, where you live, whether you're a smoker, and it starts spitting out some plans for you. And oftentimes the way these plans get sorted initially is they get sorted based on price, with the lowest price plans being the ones you see first. And so this ends up working like, you know, the first page of a Google search result or the first page of an Amazon search result. That first page is really, really valuable to an insurer. So insurers have this incentive to maybe try to underprice their plans a little bit to get on that first page so that then they can gobble up market share. But if a lot of these factors come together and you can't end up raising your venture capital to cover your losses, things go bad. And that's what's happened with Friday.
Well, I know people, especially in small business, who really liked the plans. They liked the price, for one thing, but they also liked the systems that Friday had built up, as you're mentioning, that was trying to be a little bit different. And I'm sure you've talked to many people like that. So those people were scrambling. We're talking about thousands of people, right?
So 30,000 people on the individual market here in Colorado who bought a Friday health plan through the exchange. As of right now, Colorado is a bit of an outlier nationally in that Colorado regulators are hopeful that Friday is going to have enough money in sort of its subsidiary and sort of its local business here in Colorado to continue paying claims throughout the year. There is some skepticism about whether that's going to work and if Friday can actually make it to the end of the year. If you think about how your insurance plan works, generally at the beginning of the year, you're paying all the claims cost because you haven't hit your deductible yet. And if you have a lot of health expenses, by the end of the year, your insurer is paying a lot. So Friday, the big expenses that they may end up needing to pay out here in Colorado haven't really hit yet. And then at the same time, they also have all these vendors who, like, are they going to be able to keep paying the vendors? Are they going to be able to keep all these vendors on board for an increasingly smaller chunk of business? Nationally, I think there's a lot of skepticism about whether it can actually work here in Colorado to last a year, or whether the state's going to need to step in, take them over, and then have people find new plans right now, which would be a really difficult thing. You change insurance right now, you may be halfway to meeting your deductible. You get a new plan right now, you got to start from scratch on your deductible, which is obviously a rough situation to be in.
Well, I'm sorry if I'm getting ahead of your reporting. I'm sure you'll continue to follow. But are there protections for consumers if the vendors, meaning the doctors or another provider, says, oh, no, we're not taking any more appointments for Friday Health people because they're not paying us, or we're worried they're not going to pay us? So what's the protection for that?
Yeah, I think you would hope if it gets to the point that Friday, like, literally can't pay the medical bills that it needs to pay, you would hope that the state had stepped in by that point to shut them down and get people onto different plans. There is a sort of an FDIC-like mechanism, the name of which is escaping me right now, but there is this association in Colorado that if your insurer fails and you have medical claims that they were supposed to pay that now they're not paying, that this entity would be able to step in and actually pay those claims up to, I think, $500,000 per patient. And the legislature, again, sort of seeing and worrying potentially that something could go wrong with Friday, the legislature had earlier this year passed a bill that sort of more explicitly included insurance products like Friday's in this entity's purview and to be covered by the protection this entity can provide.
Okay. Well, it might take more reminders to people who are listening if they're involved, that consumers have a right to the care, and that it may take some extra hoops to jump through or some extra phone calls, but they definitely have some protections available.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Mike, I want to turn to you. You, speaking of protections, you had a story this week about something pretty troubling in terms of a state, was it wildlife area, and some concerns about chemicals that may have gotten into the water there.
Yeah, the state is dealing with the problem down near Monte Vista, just like a mile or two east of Monte Vista in the San Luis Valley area, well known among wildlife advocates and fans and birders for lakes that are host to ducks and all kinds of other waterfowl and all other kinds of migrating birds, sandhill cranes, and a great area for fishermen and other anglers who just want to see be fishing in all that natural beauty and catch trout and channel catfish and all kinds of other things. They noticed that there were some snails dying at Home Lake, which is a state wildlife area there along the shoreline, and that there was some foliage that was dead. And they decided to test the water, found herbicides that are used on the potato crops and other crops in that area that the state does not use in their wildlife areas. And so they are going back and investigating what they suspect, or one of their, I guess, top of the list suspicions is that a crop duster operating in that area at the time that everybody knew about might have gone on an errant path and sprayed areas that went out of bounds of the crops and went over into the foliage and then into the lake. And so they've shut off the lake to fishing and have told people for at least 2 weeks to not fish there and certainly not eat any fish that they've caught recently at the lake. We'll continue to test it. We'll continue to look for other impacts on other wildlife. They can't really keep waterfowl out of the area. You can't completely fence it off or put a net over the whole thing. So they're a little bit concerned about that. But that's just the kind of thing. I guess I was surprised it hasn't happened more often, given how many wildlife areas in Colorado are right next to croplands, especially on eastern plains and the San Luis Valley. But they said it hasn't happened that often, and they're investigating, trying to figure out who might be responsible for it, and if there's any recourse for against the people who, whether civil or even possibly criminal action against the people who might be responsible. So we'll follow that and see if they know and can identify what exactly happened there.
So that's interesting. There's not a case that they can think of where there's even been drift. I mean, I know I've seen the crop dusters work sometimes and they get really low to the ground and are really operating kind of a precision way, but still, I would imagine they're dropping, you know, chemicals from the sky. I'm a little bit surprised that
they could remember one incident in that area in the San Luis Valley from wildlife officers that go back a long way. They have long careers and have memories for this kind of thing. Maybe it's happened more often in other parts of the state. And there may be a difference between drift, which can happen if the weather changes on you quickly, which obviously it can do in the Colorado Mountains and in the valley. But the path of this contamination appears to be a mile wide. And so that's not just drift of a few yards or even 100 yards. It's something a little more troublesome than that, which is why they're continuing to investigate.
And then you also had a story going up to Grand County, different problem, but with a dam and snowmelt.
Yeah, that's a story appearing on the website today that people can look for. There is a kind of a famous, infamous project up there that is supposed to be rebuilding the Colorado River channel. Windy Gap Reservoir was put in there decades ago to hold water for Front Range, to be pumped over into the Front Range for users like us and in northern Colorado. And the problem with doing that is that it blocked up the Colorado River channel in a very famous fishery and wildlife area and has created things like conditions for whirling disease that has hurt trout up there. And wildlife advocates have been angry about that literally for decades. And they spent years negotiating a workaround to create this channel that would literally bypass Windy Gap Reservoir. It's a $27 million plus project that was negotiated among wildlife advocates and Northern Water, which is the owner of Windy Gap and the manager of this project. And even some for-profit corporations who contributed money because they wanted their name attached to restoring a very important wildlife area. Well, all the runoff we've had, both snow melt and then rain in early May, nearly tripled the amount of water coming down the Colorado River into Windy Gap and went from about 800 cubic feet per second to more than 2,200 cubic feet per second. And they've been building this berm that was part of this project channel, and it overtopped the berm and spilled over into areas that had not had riprap and big boulders placed to hold down the sand and the embankment. And so there's been some damage. They don't know how much yet because the water is still so high that they can't see to the bottom of the damage. So they know there will be some damage. They are saying now that they don't think it will delay the project, which is supposed to be mostly wrapped up by the late next year, 2024. But they will add costs. They are hoping that it will be contained in terms of cost by the contingency fund that they've got. But they're also sort of reserving the right that they might need to go back to the partners for more money if it's more extensive than they think once the water recedes. So we'll keep an eye on that too. There's some pretty amazing pictures of some of the damage to this berm, and you can imagine what might be lying underneath the water in terms of more costly damage. And just seeing all that water up there in Grand County is a pretty amazing sight.
Well, thank you for following that one.
Yes, we will report back when we know more.
And everyone, thank you for following us here at the Colorado Sun and listening to us on the Daily Sun Up. So Mike and I will be back next week, and we'll have a new a podcast episode from our colleagues at The Sun here for you tomorrow. So take care.
Thanks, everybody, for your time.
You can read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. Water officials are assessing the damage after an intense runoff from spring snow and rain overtopped a new dam at a Colorado River bypass project. The damage is at the Windy Gap Reservoir in Grand County and can't be fully assessed until waters recede this summer. According to Northern Water, which is the project manager, contractors had not finished placing riprap on the south side of the dam's berm. runoff in the Colorado River leading up to Windy Gap nearly tripled over 3 days in early May. The damage should not delay its, quote, substantial completion by next year. A daycare provider in Salida is feeling relief after being found not guilty of 2 misdemeanor counts of child neglect and failure to report as a mandatory reporter. Amy Lovato was the director of the schoolyard child care when a 5-year-old boy allegedly touched fellow classmates inappropriately. One alleged incident happened when Lovato had left the room to take a soiled blanket to the laundry room. The 6-person jury found her not guilty just hours after the county commissioners allocated more than $130,000 to reopen the child care facility. Mike Johnston will be sworn in as Denver's next mayor next month after winning the runoff election Tuesday night. The former state senator won in a landslide over Kelly Bruff, the former CEO of the Denver Metro Chamber, and also served as then-Mayor John Hickenlooper's chief of staff. Johnston, who ran unsuccessfully for governor in 2018 and U.S. Senate in 2020, has vowed to serve only 2 4-year terms as mayor. He's been a teacher and a principal and worked as an education advisor in the Obama administration. Johnston replaces Michael Hancock, who was term-limited after serving for 12 years. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again next time. The Colorado Sun is nonpartisan and completely independent. We're always dedicated to telling the in-depth stories we need today more than ever. And the Sun is supported by readers and listeners like you. Right now, you can head to coloradosun.com and become a member, starting at $5 per month for a basic membership, and if you bump it up to $20 per month, you'll get access to our exclusive Politics and Outdoors newsletters. Thanks for starting your morning with us, and don't forget to tune in again tomorrow.